Okay. Great. You can hear me in the back. Okay. Thank you for inviting me to this very interesting workshop. Today I'm going to discuss multi-scale seizure dynamics. Before I start, I would like to thank some of my collaborators on this project, which include statisticians and mathematicians at Boston University and Brown, as well as clinical collaborators, including Sid Cash, who's going to talk immediately after me. All right, so an outline. First, we'll discuss the data, invasive voltage recordings from human subjects during seizure. We'll then look at how these data evolve across temporal and spatial scales. And we'll try to address a particular question, why do seizures stop? And we'll address that. We'll try to give a dynamical understanding for seizure termination, and also sometimes why do seizures fail to stop. And hopefully throughout I can give you a sense for the richness of these data, and Sid will talk a lot more about a particular type of these data, the single unit activity. And feel free to interrupt me throughout with questions. Okay, so let's start at the macroscopic spatial scale. We'll consider invasive EEG, or electrocardiogram ECOG data. To give you a sense for these data, here's a craniotomy from a human subject. The skull over the left hemisphere of the brain has been removed. And in this case, an 8x8 electrode grid, you can see it here, has been placed on the brain surface. To give you a sense of scale, the spacing between the electrodes is 1 centimeter. There's also a strip of electrodes that tucks under the brain here and 2 depth electrodes that pierce the brain perpendicular to its surface and are recording from deeper structures. So from all these electrodes, voltage activity is recorded as a function of time. So we have this multivariate high-density data set, about 100 electrodes on the surface of the brain and deep in the brain, and the sampling rate is 500 hertz, pretty good for a clinical recording. And the purpose of these data is to localize the seizure focus, so identify the area of the brain that's giving rise to the seizure. And the standard clinical analysis of these data is visual inspection. So an epileptologist will stare at traces like this and use this to help determine what area of the brain to cut out. So again, standard analysis is visual inspection. What we'd like to do is maybe develop additional tools that clinicians can use to help characterize these data beyond visual inspection. Okay, let's start by analyzing some of these data. We'll begin with our own visual inspection of a time series during a seizure. Always a good place to start with a new data set. So here's an example from one ECOG electrode. The seizure starts somewhere out here and ends out here. And we could perform a visual inspection and try to identify the rhythms that are occurring in these data. So what do we see? Well, at seizure onset, there's a blast of high frequency, low amplitude activity, a beta buzz, a 20 hertz blast of activity. I'll define high frequency here as 20 hertz. That's very different from the HFO or the VFO that we heard about yesterday. So 20 hertz activity, low amplitude at seizure onset. Then there's this transition to large amplitude oscillations, typically near 10 or 15 hertz for these types of seizures. They're starting focally and then generalizing to the entire brain. If you stare at this trace, maybe you can convince yourself that the rhythmic activity is changing over the course of the seizure. What it looks like is happening is it's slowing down, starting near 10 to 15 hertz, ending near 2 to 3 hertz. This is what's known as a brain chirp or an ictal chirp, well-characterized phenomena for these type of seizures that Steve, I think, was the first to report, as far as I know. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah, I think so, too. Another thing you may notice is this transition at termination, where the brain essentially flatlines and turns off. And we'll think more about that towards the end of this talk. So that's a visual inspection. We can get a sense for what's happening in these data. We can try to characterize these in more quantitative ways by computing things like time frequency spectra. So here's an example. We've already seen examples of these in previous talks. We're showing power and color, where warm colors indicate high power or high amplitude oscillations as a function of frequency and time. And if we follow this red ridge, it indicates the frequency of dominant power. We see it slows during the course of the seizure. This is just one seizure from one subject. We can look at multiple seizures from the same subject, and we get the same qualitative behavior, the slowing rhythmic activity during the course of a seizure, slowing dominant rhythm. So the hypothesis, rhythms slow during these types of seizures, consistent with what's been observed. So that's one way we can analyze these data, looking at rhythms. We can also look at how activity is coupled over space. To do that, we can, again, start with our data. We can grab activity at 2 electrodes and, let's say, a 1-second interval and ask, are these 2 time series coupled? If the answer to that question is yes, we can represent it graphically by connecting a line between those 2 electrodes. There's a long history of analyzing coupling in time series data from patients with epilepsy. There are also many choices we can use for the coupling measure that we'll apply. We're going to apply a particularly simple measure here, the cross-correlation. It's some measure of linear association between two time series. We can debate this at some point. Maybe people have their own particular measures they like to apply, but this is the one that we use. And maybe you can imagine repeating this analysis for all electrode pairs. We can do that and build what's called a functional network, where the nodes in our network are the electrodes, and the edges indicate significant correlations between electrode pairs, between the time series recorded at those electrode pairs. So let's look at how these functional networks evolve during a seizure. So we can imagine taking all of our electrodes and laying them out in a line and then plotting voltage as a function of time. In this cartoon example, seizures may last a long time, let's say 60 seconds or 90 seconds. What we'll do is divide the data up into small windows. So let's take a 1 second interval, build a functional network. We'll then do that for the next interval, build a functional network, and so on. We'll eventually tile all of our data with these functional networks. And we can watch how these functional networks evolve in time. So here are some example functional networks to orient you. Here's the 8x8 electrode grid. It's highlighted here in yellow, just like over here. There are also some other strip and depth electrodes. Again, the nodes are the circles, the red circles in this case, and significant correlations are in black. We can look at how these networks evolve in time. So here's the network in the first second, the second second, the third second, the fourth second, and so on. We can look at how these networks evolve. We can also show a movie of this. Play that here. So what's being plotted here is a three-dimensional reconstruction of a patient's brain. The black circles are electrodes, and the green lines are edges. There are also six voltage traces from electrodes shown here. Time is evolving as this black line. Seizure onset begins at the red line. And we can at least get a qualitative sense for how these networks are changing during a seizure by staring at this movie. So the seizure starts here. We have this blast of high-frequency, low-amplitude activity. We can watch how the networks evolve. Eventually, we're changing into these large amplitude oscillations characteristic of the seizure. At this point, the patient is probably experiencing convulsions for this type of seizure. The rhythmic activity is now slowing down. We still have these large amplitude oscillations. Still rhythmic activity slowing. Maybe you've seen how the networks have changed, at least qualitatively, and get a sense for it. And I'll try to stop this movie as we approach seizure termination. We get these blasts of activity near seizure termination. And I'll try to stop it right here, so right at the end of the seizure. So maybe by watching these movies, you can get a sense for how these networks are evolving. And one conclusion you might make, which I think is a completely reasonable conclusion, is that we're, again, overwhelmed with data. So we started with this complicated data set, time series evolving, and all of these electrodes as a function of time. We then built these functional networks, and again, we're overwhelmed with all of this data. So what can we do to help succinctly characterize what's happening? Well, we can apply techniques from network analysis. There are lots and lots of techniques we can apply. I'll just describe one of them here. And the particular technique we will look at is we'll compute components in our networks, which are groups of electrodes connected by edges. So as a simple example, let's imagine we have this 4x4 electrode grid. I'll put some edges on that grid. We can now define two interesting components, one in the upper right-hand corner. We can go from any yellow node to any other yellow node by following a path of edges. So there's one component. We have another interesting component in the bottom left. We can travel from one red node to any other red node following a path of edges. There are also trivial components. These are nodes that don't talk to anyone else. And in this figure, and all the figures I'll show you, red will always indicate the largest component, the one with the most number of nodes. So let's look at how these components evolve during a seizure. So what do? We take 1 second of data, build our functional network, and then compute the components. What you might notice in this case is there's a dominant red component. It's covering most of our 8x8 electrode grid, which is here. Some missing electrodes, as well as some strip and depth electrodes. So that's just 1 second near seizure onset here, 4 more seconds near seizure onset, and you see in each case this large component dominates, so a single dominant component. If we then move into the middle part of the seizure, we can repeat the same analysis, and what we find is that a dominant component persists, it's shown here in red, but it's somewhat smaller. It's now localized to the bottom of our grid and strip electrodes. We also have the emergence of these other smaller components shown in yellow and purple and blue and green. So what we're seeing in this case is a fracturing of these functional networks into smaller pieces. And if we move to seizure termination, we see that the dominant component returns. So we have the single dominant. Yes? Sid, what area of the brain was resected for this patient? Do you know? BU1? Yeah.
So when you're computing cross correlation between all
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So what we do is, so we can discuss this in detail. So what we do is apply an analytic significance test. So we have to deal with multiple comparisons. We do that with a false discovery rate. So we have an analytic procedure to compute p-values, and then we threshold those p-values based on a false discovery rate. That's a good question. There are lots of different ways to do that, and it can be debated. Yeah, what's the best way? Yes. So we don't do that in this case. We've done that. I won't discuss that here. We thought about that a little bit. It's hard to say what is a normal network in a patient with epilepsy. But we can maybe discuss that offline too. We've tried to analyze these data outside of the seizure interval as well. And what we find is a remarkable consistency of these functional networks in time. So the same networks seem to appear again and again. If you're interested in that, I can give you some references. Okay. So the story we'd like to tell here is this formation of a dominant component at seizure onset, fracturing during the middle part of the seizure, and then a reformation at termination. So that's just one example from one patient. We can look at population results, 11 subjects and 48 seizures. We'll compute the components here in 12 intervals, one pre-seizure, 10 seizure, and one post-seizure. We divide the seizures up into intervals to normalize time. Patients may have seizures of different lengths, and we'd like to average over the entire population. And what we find is the number of components increases significantly during the middle part of the seizure. That's consistent with this idea that the networks fracture during the middle part of the seizure and then reform at termination. We have a reduction in the number of components, both at onset and at termination. So we have this fracturing and then reformation of the networks during the seizure. So I'll just summarize what we've looked at so far in the macroscopic spatial scale. We've looked at these chirp data, these changing rhythmic activities. Their rhythms are slowing during the seizure. We're proposing this fracturing of the functional networks during the middle part of the seizure and then a coalescence or reformation at termination. Now let's consider data at a smaller spatial scale. So we'll move to the microscale. We'll look at local field potential or LFP data. To illustrate this idea, here's a cartoon representation of an electrode implantation in a single subject. There's an 8x8 grid as well as other strip and depth electrodes. And there's a star here which indicates a microelectrode array. To give you a sense of scale, this is 4 millimeters by 4 millimeters, about the size of Abraham Lincoln's head on a penny. Each of these contacts is 1 millimeter in length. This electrode array is stuck into the brain and it records voltage population from small, or voltage activity from small neural populations. So what we'll discuss here is the LFP data. In the next talk, Sid will discuss in much more detail these types of data and analyses and looking at single unit activity during a seizure. Let's just look at the data. Again, always a good place to start. Here's example activity during a seizure from a single microelectrode. What you might notice if you stare at this, the seizure starts somewhere out here. We have this blast of low frequency, high amplitude activity, this transition to large amplitude oscillations. And if you stare at this long enough, you might convince yourself that rhythmic activity is slowing down. So we're seeing this brain chirp, this ictal chirp phenomena, consistent with what we saw at the macroscopic spatial scale. Again, we can try to characterize this more quantitatively by looking at time frequency spectra. So here's another example. If we look at the red region, the region of dominant power, we can see that, at least qualitatively, the rhythmic activity tends to slow, although there's lots of interesting structure happening here and at higher frequency bands. But at least in the low frequency bands, we're seeing the slowing rhythmic activity. Again, consistent with what we've seen at the macroscopic spatial scale, these brain chirps in the local field potential. So far we've considered dynamics across two spatial scales. We can look at dynamics recorded simultaneously across multiple spatial scales as well. So we've already talked a bit about this microelectrode array. These data can be filtered into different frequency bands. If we look in the high-pass filter, we can construct what's called multi-unit activity, which may represent population spiking activity. If we filter into a low-frequency band, we can look at the local field potential. And again, Sid will talk a lot more about this type of spiking data. We can then look simultaneously at activity recorded in ECOG data. So at single ECOG electrode, here's a plot of voltage activity. This is from mid-seizure up to termination. And we can even go up to the scalp EEG, a non-invasive measure of brain voltage activity. Electrodes placed directly on the scalp surface. And look how this activity changes from mid-seizure all the way up to seizure termination. And if you look at all of these data, again, recorded simultaneously at these different spatial scales, one thing you might wonder about is what's happening here at seizure termination. This is this blue line. Again, this is from mid-seizure to termination. We're seeing the slowing rhythmic activity, at least qualitatively by eye. And notice, especially in this ECOG data, this abrupt transition from these large amplitude bursts to almost nothing. The brain essentially flatlines. This is also apparent maybe in the local field potential and in the multi-unit activity. It's a little messier in the scalp EEG. We have to deal with lots of muscle artifacts at the scalp surface. So a question we can ask is, what's happening dynamically at the end of the seizure? In order to address that, I'll discuss briefly here this idea of tipping points, which has, it's, the idea is an abrupt transition in which a system shifts from one state to another. It has lots of different names depending on the field that you're interested in. I'll call them tipping points here, and I'll discuss mathematically what we mean by a tipping point in a model towards the end of this talk. So let's start with an example. What do we mean by a tipping point? Well, imagine we have this potential well that I've drawn here in white. We can drop a marble in this potential well. It rolls around and eventually settles down. So this point is a fixed point. If we start our marble there, it's stuck. Let's label it A. It's also stable. If we kick it left or right, it stays there, and it eventually rolls back. So we have this stable fixed point in our system. If we start the marble somewhere else, it eventually rolls down to another minimum. We have a fixed point. Let's label it B. There's also, oops, there's a third fixed point in this system, right? Where is it? It's at the peak of this hill. We can start a marble there, but if we kick it in any direction, it rolls away. So we have an unstable fixed point as well in this system. So as a simple qualitative characterization of this system, we can just list the number of fixed points. So we'll say there are three fixed points in this system. It's a qualitative way to characterize it. Let's now imagine we have a parameter we can tune in this system. We just tune this parameter a tiny little bit, and it acts to deform our potential well. This deformation causes some changes, right? If we stare at the well, it looks different. But in terms of the number of fixed points, it's the same. We still have two stable and one unstable. We can continue to tune this parameter, so let's change it a little bit more. Our potential well continues to change. Again, we have two stable fixed points, one unstable fixed point, still three fixed points. So we're tuning this parameter. Qualitatively, our system has not changed. But maybe you can guess what's going to happen. Let's tune our parameter just a tiny bit more. We lose two of our fixed points, and we're left with only one. So in this case, we have this large qualitative change in the system. By changing our parameter a tiny little bit, we've gone from three fixed points to one. It's a bifurcation in our system, which we'll call crossing a tipping point in this case. If we were interested in state A, that state is suddenly gone. We're only left with state B. So what we'd like to propose is that seizures terminate by crossing a tipping point. It looks something like this. What's nice about this idea or hypothesis is there are particular warning signs we can look for, dynamical signatures of an impending tipping point. And I'll discuss a couple of them here, or three of them here. The first is critical slowing down. So that means is near this transition, near the tipping point, the system should become increasingly slow in recovering from perturbations. So let's look far from the tipping point, so we're far from the transition. We put our marble in the potential well, we perturb it, it goes up this very steep hill and quickly rolls back. So in this case, we kick the system and it quickly returns. But as we get closer to the tipping point, near this transition, we put our marble at the fixed point, we give it a kick, it goes up this very shallow potential well and then slowly returns. So this maybe gives you a sense for these changing dynamics that we expect in the system as we approach the tipping point. And that should manifest as slower fluctuations in our system and also as increased autocorrelations in the system. Autocorrelations, whatever was happening now, should be similar to what was happening in the immediate past. So those are two signatures we can start looking for in the data. The third signature we'll look at is flickering, in which we expect the system to move back and forth between two alternative attractors as it gets close to the tipping point. So to give you a sense for that idea, here we have our potential well, we have our marble in position A, and let's say we have stochastic forcing in the system that's kicking the marble around. We can write down the position of the marble as a function of time. Initially it's stuck in position A. But every once in a while, we'll get a large enough kick with this stochastic forcing to push it over this hump, and it'll wind up in position B. And then stuck there for a while. So it gets these small kicks and a noise in our system. Stuck there for a little bit, so we're in position B. Every once in a while, we'll give it a big enough kick back. It'll end in position A, and we get this flickering between these two different attractor states, A and B. So the dynamics flicker or appear in the two different states in the system. So those are the signatures we'll look for. Let's return to our ECOG data and ask, do we see any evidence of these dynamical signatures in the data as we approach termination? Let's start with visual inspection. So here again is a time series recorded from a single ECOG electrode. Do we see evidence of critical slowing down? Well, maybe. We've talked a bit about this ictal chirp, the slowing rhythmic activity during the seizure. What about changing autocorrelations? Do we see increased autocorrelations approaching termination? It's probably hard to say just by staring at this trace. We'll have to do some more quantitative analysis. And what about flickering in this system? Do we see any evidence of the manifestation of two different states? Let's define two states in a very crude way. We'll define a seizure state as large amplitude oscillations that I've tried to highlight here in red. We'll define a post-seizure state as small amplitude oscillations highlighted here in green. And maybe if we look just before seizure termination, we see manifestations of both states. We see these low amplitude intervals interspersed with these blasts of high amplitude activity. So maybe we are seeing the flickering phenomenon. We can again address all this in a more quantitative way, so let's look at some measures. We've already talked a lot about this ictal chirp, slowing rhythmic activity during a seizure, where in this case we're plotting the average power over all electrodes as a function of time, where termination occurs here at the end. If we want to summarize what we're observing in this figure, what can we do? Well, we can ask, what is the frequency of dominant power at each point in time? So essentially, starting at each time point, looking for the darkest red or black region. If we find all of those points and fit them with a line, we'll see this line has negative slope. So what that indicates in this case is the rhythmic activity tends to slow. The dominant rhythms tend to slow during the seizure. We can repeat this analysis for all the spatial scales of the data that we've observed, compute these power spectra, determine the slope, the frequency of maximum power. And what we find in each case, that all the spatial scales that we've considered is a negative slope. And this is over a population of patients in seizures at these different scales. Because the slope is negative, we can propose this conclusion. The dominant rhythms tend to slow in the approach to seizure termination at all the different spatial scales. Maybe that's not surprising. That's what visual inspection suggests. There's one signature. What about autocorrelations? We'll compute the autocorrelation at lag 10, essentially asking how similar is the time series to its activity 10 milliseconds in the past. Here's a way to summarize that measure. What we're plotting here is the distribution of autocorrelation values as a function of time all the way up to seizure termination. If we look at this distribution, what we see is it's generally between 0.4 and 0.8, so time series tend to be autocorrelated with whatever is happening in the immediate past. And we could stare at this, and maybe we can get a sense for how it's changing as we approach seizure termination. Again, to summarize this measure, we can fit the mean autocorrelation as a function of time. Essentially, that boils down to finding the darkest red region and following that as a function of time. What we find is it has positive slope in this case. What that indicates, the autocorrelation tends to increase as we approach seizure termination. So increasing autocorrelations approaching termination. And again, we can repeat this analysis for all spatial scales, and this is what we find. So if we look at the field data, the EEG to the LFP data, we find that they're all positive. So increasing autocorrelations approaching termination. But if we look at the multi-unit activity, we see that the slope is not significantly different from zero. So what this suggests, at least in the field activity that we're observing, increasing autocorrelations approaching termination, consistent with this idea of approaching tipping point. And then the last measure we'll consider here is flickering. So here again is an illustration of the end of a seizure in ECOG data. What we'll do is define different states. We'll define a ictal state. The seizure state is high variance. I tried to highlight here in red what the ictal state looks like. We also have a post-ictal state of low variance, and that's shown here. Seizure termination is about right here in green. And we'll define a pre-ictal or inter-ictal state, which has a variance somewhere in between those two, between the low and the high. And what we'll do in this analysis, I'll just briefly go over it here, is we'll try to classify the variance we observe in these two separate intervals, or in two separate intervals. We'll look mid-seizure and pre-termination. And what we'll do is we'll ask, in the mid-seizure interval, we'll take a variance vector and ask, does it look like the ictal attractor, the post-ictal attractor, or an inter-ictal attractor? And what we'll find, perhaps not surprisingly, is if we look mid-seizure, we classify most of the variances we observe as falling in the ictal state. Mid-seizure, we expect these high amplitude, large variance oscillations, and that's exactly what we find. So that's not so surprising. But if we look just before termination, in this flickering interval that I've highlighted here, what we find instead is two changes. The variance vectors that we classify as ictal go down, so if we compare this red bar to this red bar, we see a significant decrease in the red ones, while the variance vectors we classify as post-ictal go up, and that increase is significant. So what this suggests, at least it's consistent with this idea of flickering, the manifestation of these two different attractor states that I've highlighted here by hand, green and red, in the approach to seizure termination. We can repeat this analysis across spatial scales, and what we find is that in the mid-seizure state, not surprisingly, the high variance activity dominates. We have these giant red bars in the mid-seizure state at all the spatial scales that we observe. But if we look right at seizure termination, we see that the ictal classification tends to go down, while the post-ictal classification, the green bar, tends to go up. These changes are significant in the macro scale data, the EEG and the ECOG data, scalp and depth here. Doesn't matter, but we have two different ways of looking at the ECOG data, but it's a not significant change in the LFP and multi-unit activity. So this supports the idea, this hypothesis of flickering in the approach to seizure termination. And I'll just briefly summarize the results that we have from the data analysis. We do have some signatures of an approaching tipping point as we get near seizure termination. We can summarize them in this table. The tipping point signatures do tend to appear in the field activity. All of the measures that we've computed, slowing rhythmic activity, increased temporal correlations, flickering, and we also looked at increased spatial correlations, but I didn't describe that here. All of those signatures of an impending tipping point we find in the EEG and ECOG data. We find 3 of the 4 signatures in the local field potential data. There may be a flickering, but it's not significant, at least at the data we've looked at so far. But maybe what's interesting is we don't find these signatures in the multi-unit activity. So at the small spatial scale we're considering. So maybe what this suggests, something we could debate, is this tipping point, this particular dynamical phenomenon is emerging at the macroscopic spatial scale, but not apparent in the microscopic spatial scale. So maybe something about seizure termination is a macroscopic emergent phenomenon. Okay. And from this data, so we can analyze all this data, we have evidence that we're approaching a tipping point, but we can't prove it by looking at the data. So I'll briefly discuss the model. Yes. Yes. This one? One more?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, so the question is what types of bifurcations could be happening here, 1 or 2? It's hard to address that in the data, and I'll show you right now a mathematical model that'll maybe give you a better sense for the types of bifurcations that we're seeing. And I think it'll make this a little bit more concrete. So let's try that, and then we can go back to this. Okay. I'm going to jump forward here. Okay. So we've considered a lot of data analysis. We have lots of evidence that we're approaching this tipping point, but it's not conclusive based on the data. We can say a little bit more about this phenomenon, a system we can control, like a biophysical model. We'll discuss a simple biophysical model here. Or by simple, I mean we will not consider the spiking activity of individual neurons. Instead, we'll consider the mean field activity of neural populations. This is like the Wilson-Cowan type model, representing excitatory and inhibitory cell populations, where here we're using a formulation developed by Lilly. We can analyze the model dynamics. I'll start with a qualitative description and then show you some more quantitative analysis. So what we can do in this model is we can induce a seizure attractor. I'll represent it in the two-dimensional plane in this screen as a ring. So we have this red ring, our ictal or seizure attractor. No matter where we start the dynamics in this two-dimensional plane, we approach the ring. So this ring is stable. As the dynamics approach this ring, they spin around and around and around, and that manifests as large amplitude rhythmic activity, high variance activity that's characteristic of the ictal state. We can then tune a parameter in this system. I'll tell you what that is in a minute. We can induce a post-seizure attractor, where in the plane, this post-seizure attractor is a point. No matter where we start the dynamics in this two-dimensional plane, the point is stable. So wherever we start, we eventually spin in and land on this point. And that manifests in the dynamic activity as small amplitude fluctuations, where here we have noise in the system too. So we're sitting near the fixed point, but moving around a little bit. This represents a low variance state, like what we see in the post-ictal period after the seizure stops. And what's nice about this model is that we can induce both at the same time. So we can tune our parameters in a particular way to have both the ictal attractor, the red ring, and the post-ictal attractor, this point. And depending on where we start, we can end up at one attractor or the other. If we start outside the separatrix, this gray curve, we move out to the ring. Inside, we move into the point. If we have enough noise in our system, we can move back and forth between these two different attractors and get flickering phenomena. So we can sometimes be on the outer ring, sometimes on the inner point. Sometimes in the outer ring, sometimes in the inner point. Get kicked back and forth between the two. So we can induce flickering in this system. So some details about this model. It's a system of 14 ODEs, stochastic ODEs in this case. I'll show you a bifurcation diagram. If you're used to looking at these, then this will make sense. Otherwise, the previous figure is enough, I think, to get a qualitative understanding for the system. So what we're plotting here is one of the dynamic variables, H sub E. We can think of that as the voltage activity in our model versus a parameter. This parameter represents excitatory synaptic strength. As we change this parameter, we can trace interesting structures in this model. We have a branch of stable limit cycles. The maxima and minima are shown here. So here's the maximum and minima. You can think of oscillations moving between these two black curves. We also have a branch of unstable fixed points, stable fixed points, and a branch of unstable limit cycles born in a Hopf bifurcation that acts as the separatrix in this system. So that's what's happening in the model. What's nice about the model is we can identify exactly the bifurcation that gives rise to the tipping point It's a fold of limit cycles, a saddle node of limit cycles. And this model we can use to mimic a lot of the behavior we see in the clinical data. So we observe critical slowing down, so we see the frequency of activity slow as we approach this tipping point. We also see autocorrelations increase. We can also induce flickering in this bistable region, where we have both a stable fixed point, which represents the postictal state, and stable limit cycle, which represents the seizure. They both coexist in this intermediate region, separated by the separatrix in this case, the branch of unstable limit cycles. And if we have enough noise, we can get kicked back and forth between these two different attractors. And again, what's nice about this model, we can identify exactly the dynamical mechanisms in this model of seizure termination, a fold of limit cycles. So, yes. Yeah. Right. So biophysical in the sense that at least it has populations of excitatory inhibitory cells that interact through synaptic interactions. Yeah. So all we're trying to do here is capture qualitatively what's happening in the dynamics. So we're using all the parameters at their typical fixed values. We excite the system a little bit by increasing essentially excitatory drive to all of the cells. And then the only parameter we adjust is excitatory synaptic strength, which maybe is not, we can think of that as, we can interpret that in lots of different ways. It may not be synapses actually getting stronger, so it may not be a plasticity mechanism. It may be just populations of neurons becoming more synchronized and having a stronger downstream effect. So we can try to interpret all of these effects. So it's biophysical in that sense. We're not using an abstract oscillator model. That's a good question. Yes?
When you approach
the tipping point or critical transition, yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. So, yeah, this is a great observation. So I'll just briefly mention this. How much time do I have left? Okay, great. Yeah, so this is a great observation. 20 minutes. Okay, lots of time. I'm almost done anyway. So if we look at this branch of unstable limit cycles, we see that the basin of attraction of the stable fixed point gets bigger as we get closer and closer to the tipping point. So it's easier to be close to the stable fixed point. There's more yellow down here under this gray curve than above. So what we might expect is to see larger intervals of sitting at the stable fixed point, the postictal attractor, as we get closer and closer to termination, which I think is similar to what you're saying. And then we can look at that qualitatively. So let's jump back to this figure. If we stare at this trace, what we see is if we look at these green intervals, they're initially short, and maybe you can get a sense that they're getting longer and longer as we get closer and closer to the tipping point. That's because the basin of, well, maybe in the model, this is because the basin of attraction is getting bigger for the postictal attractor. That gray curve is getting wider and wider and wider. It's easier to stay close to the postictal attractor. Okay. That way, yeah, okay. All right. All right. And then one last thing. So I just have one last thing to say here. So in the last part of this talk, I'll just mention this idea of status epilepticus. This is seizures that do not self-terminate, a life-threatening condition. And what we can do is use our model to make some predictions about what we would expect to happen in status. So we'll use this model, again, to try to understand dynamically what we think is happening during this particular condition, seizure that does not spontaneously self-terminate. So let's return to our model. We've talked a lot about self-terminating seizures. This is the normal phenomena we're observing. This is a qualitative picture. As the seizure evolves, we expect this separatrix to get bigger and bigger and bigger, eventually colliding with this outer red ring. That's the critical transition or tipping point in our system where we're only left with the postictal attractor. So that's the story we have for a self-terminating seizure. It moves from left to right in this figure, eventually annihilating this outer branch of limit cycles. Now, what we'd like to propose during status is that instead of crossing this tipping point, we get close to it, but then move back, close to it and move back, and close to it and move back. So we get close to the tipping point, but never quite cross it. And so we're always in this state where the ictal attractor remains strong. If that's the case, we can make particular dynamical predictions about what should happen. So what happens in the model in this yellow state? Well, as we move from left to right in this system, we've seen the frequency, the dominant frequency of oscillation decreases, while the autocorrelation increases. So these two curves move in opposite directions, these two measures. And that's exactly what we've seen in the self-terminating seizures, the black line. Now, what's different about the status case is that we move back in the other direction. So we'd also would expect to see the frequency to increase as we move back in the opposite direction, and the autocorrelation to decrease, just the opposite change. So we'd expect to see both of these phenomena. These are predictions of our model. The two measures should be anti-correlated, moving in opposite directions, and we should see this pattern repeat over and over again if we believe this idea, getting close to the tipping point, moving away, close to the tipping point and moving away. So let's test that prediction in some data. We'll compare the frequency of maximum power that we observe versus the mean autocorrelation. We can take our model, and what we're plotting here again is the frequency of maximum power in red versus the mean autocorrelation in black. And if you stare at this trace, you see that they move in anti-correlated directions. This is a model simulation, getting close to the tipping point and then moving away, close to the tipping point and moving away. If you stare at this long enough, maybe you can convince yourself that these two time series look anti-correlated. The red and black looks like they're moving in opposite directions. And here's an example from scalp EEG data during status. So this is 10 minutes of scalp EEG data, the exact same measures. And if you stare at this trace, maybe again you can convince yourself that these two measures are moving in opposite directions. So we can characterize this by computing the cross-correlation between these two time series, between the red and black time series. Two things to notice. The first, so if we look at zero lag, we have this strong anti-correlation between the red and black curves. And also we have this rhythmic structure in the model. So we have this rhythmic structure in the cross-correlation, which indicates these repeated events. And we also see at least a manifestation of that rhythmic structure in the data as well. Yes?
In your model,
so we know exactly where the tipping point is in the model. It's at a particular value of the connectivity. When we get to it, we give it a random kick back of a certain amount. Yep. Yep. Yeah, so that's an interesting observation. We've tried to check this analysis as well using synthetic chirp data. So I think what you're asking is whether or not the change in rhythmic activity is affecting all the other measures in the data. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, the way we've tried to assess that and the way we've tried to check that is by looking at synthetic chirp data. So we just generate a slowing rhythmic time series, repeat all of this analysis. And what we find in that slowing in the synthetic data, which is just going from like 10 hertz, let's say, to 2 hertz, the autocorrelation, so we get different changes. Maybe we can discuss that offline. Okay. So it doesn't seem to be a manifestation of the changing rhythmic activity. That's not infecting all of our measures. We're looking at the autocorrelation in a very small time window, too. So we're only looking in, I think, 100 millisecond window. That's a good question, though. Okay.
So it's a different measure just because we're looking at the two measures that continue in time. So you're measuring it more near 20 hertz, and the autocorrelation you're measuring is not going to look at the same. So that period is frequency higher.
Yeah, so we can get into the details if you want. We're computing the power spectrum in 2-second windows, so we can get a high enough frequency resolution for the data, half a hertz. And we're computing the autocorrelation in very small windows, 100 milliseconds, I think, or maybe 50 milliseconds of the time series. So you might worry whether or not the slowing rhythmic activity is affecting that autocorrelation, but in such a small window, we can at least detrend it and eliminate, I think, a lot of that low frequency phenomenon. Yeah, it's a good question, though. Any other questions on that? Well, let's look at, briefly, a few more things. We can look at self-terminating seizures. So these are seizures where we see similar trends, increasing autocorrelation, decreased power. And what's happening in self-terminating seizures, we see the same trends, but they don't repeat. It only happens once until we hit seizure termination. So these are 4 self-terminating seizures. We don't get this repeated structure like we're observing in the status data. And again, we can summarize all of these results. We can look at the cross-correlation between these black and red time series during both seizure and during status. This is over 5 status patients in EEG and ECOG. And we see that they have a strong anti-correlation at zero lag, which is what we would expect through the visual inspection. So the proposal, the hypothesis we'll make, is we're seeing this repeated approach and retreat from the tipping point during status. Never quite crossing it, and the seizure never terminates. or it doesn't terminate until there's a drug intervention or some other effect. So briefly to conclude, we've looked at seizures across spatial and temporal scales. We're looking at this ictal chirp phenomenon, the slowing rhythmic activity. We're looking at this fracturing and coalescence of the spatial networks, of the functional networks we've been observing. And our proposal is that these seizures are approaching a tipping point at termination, and status is this failure to cross the tipping point. So I'll thank patient volunteers, our funding sources, and the collaborators, including Sid Cash, who will talk next. Thanks. Yeah, we'll go this way. Yep. That's right. So yeah, that's so for the bifurcation analysis, we used a ODE system, no stochastics. But we want to be able to push that system between these two different basins of attraction. So we want to have enough noise in the system to kick it back and forth between these two systems. So that, I think, is where the stochastic part is the most important. But a lot of our analysis was done on the ODE system without noise.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know exactly the answer to that. If you look at a lot of these phenomena... Sure. Yeah, so the question was, is this phenomenon, this tipping point phenomena, localized to individual electrodes, or is it appearing across the brain simultaneously at termination, or is it starting at some electrodes and then infecting other ones? If we look at, I don't know, maybe Sid has examples of this. If you look at seizure termination, just at the voltage traces, it appears to happen simultaneously almost across all channels at the exact moment. It's not like seizure onset, which is more staggered, and you can see kind of a spread over the brain. Termination is, at least in these types of seizures, a very abrupt event simultaneously occurring across multiple channels in these types of seizures. So my sense is that it is a global phenomenon, but we haven't tested that directly. Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know if you have any sort of like empirical phase-based techniques to sort of measure, you know, what's happening in the data. And that, you know,
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's an issue that a lot of us struggle with in modeling and computational neuroscience. How do we connect it directly to the data? So this is a qualitative model that captures some aspects of the data, not all aspects of the data. Maybe we can do things like Steve was talking about yesterday, Kalman filtering and trying to estimate parameters directly from the time series data. Maybe that would be useful. Maybe we need to rebuild the whole thing. Maybe we should use more abstract models and just try to capture the properties of the data without talking about biophysical mechanisms. Maybe we need single neuron. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the complete answer to that. Yes. Yep.
So,
yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Yes.
Do you have any thoughts to why that happens?
Yeah.
That correlates with what appears to be the fracturing of the frequency as well in the frequency class, that there were right around the mid-seizure when the amplitude increased, there seems to be multiple seizure frequency areas.
Yes. So that's a good question. What's happening in the middle of the seizure where we're seeing this breaking up of the functional network? So Sid and I talk about this a lot, and we have some ideas. Roughly, the idea that we have is there's this initiation event that's somehow exciting all these different oscillators in the brain, and that tends to link them up. They all get going, and then as they all start doing their own thing, the network kind of breaks up. Maybe you're getting different frequency oscillators appearing in different areas of the brain. So you get this initial kick that excites everything, and then they all do their own thing for a while and eventually reconnect, and then the seizure stops. Yep. Only initially, and it seems like if you look at those different components, they do have different frequency bands. They do have different spectral characteristics, and maybe that's consistent with the measure that we're using. Maybe it's an artifact of the measure. Maybe it's something fundamental. Yeah, I don't know the answer. So Aaron.
Any idea or can the model address why it's
Right. That's a good question. We haven't modeled that at all. So we haven't tried to identify the mechanisms that are causing the approach to seizure termination, what parameter is actually changing, some slow variable changing in the system that we haven't modeled. Now we're tuning it by hand, but maybe we can incorporate it somehow with the dynamics. Yeah, we haven't tried to model that yet. Good question. Yes. Yeah, we haven't looked at that directly. My guess is yes. There are lots of parameters you can tune in this model. You can probably make it do lots of different interesting oscillatory activity. The reason we've stayed away from seizure onset is it's trickier to find in the data. How do you exactly determine seizure onset? Is it this blast of high-frequency HFO activity? Is it this beta buzz of 20 hertz? Is it some other manifestation? So seizure termination is at least it's easier to identify in the data. Right, and maybe you can imagine the type of bifurcation that would give rise to that, a supercritical Hopf bifurcation where you have this slow ramp up and increasing frequency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. If, Sid, if you have a blast of high frequency activity, let's say 20 hertz, does it always lead to seizure onset?
No.
It might be redundant, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's a little fun because you don't want one of us in 2 years to go,
ha,
you're wrong.
Yeah, I'm used to that, yeah. Yes, so I didn't mention that here, but we've also, there's one extra column in this table where we have looked at spatial correlations, this column. I didn't discuss it here, and we did that in a very simple way, just a two-dimensional spatial correlation where we could. So in the EEG data, where we had a grid, and also in the ECOG data and the LFP. So we do see that increasing spatial correlation. How a tipping point affects spatial correlations is still an issue of debate. Maybe there are other structures that you could look for. In general, it's this increasing spatial correlation. Maybe it's different patterns of activity that appear. So maybe you'll get, so in an ecosystem, you might see patchiness before grassland converts to a desert. So maybe there's a patchy structure we should be looking for. We've only looked for a general increase in spatial correlation. Right. So maybe in the instant where we're almost at the tipping point, we can see the scale-free behavior. So if it gets stuck there, maybe we can see some of this phenomena, but we think we're just passing through it. So some of you'd have to hold the system right there at the critical transition. Exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.